Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 27-year talk radio host coming to you live from Los Angeles. All 27 years, all in Los Angeles. And this is Raising the Vibration. We're at RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com. Live Paranormal, of course, syndicated all over the world. iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Blog Talk Radio. We are coming to you live, bringing you the best in spiritual and paranormal radio programming. Raising the Vibration is an outreach of a movement of peace and love and kindness and unity that I founded in 2016 to carry on my mom's teachings, both spiritual and paranormal, after her death. The cornerstone words, of course, peace, love, kindness, and unity. And then for this show, our cornerstone words, ascend, evolve, inspire, and love. Basically, what are you doing to raise your own vibration? How are you evolving? How are you contributing to the whole of what's going on in the world? And then what are you doing with those two things you have amassed? What are you doing to make the world a better place, a more beautiful place? How are you spreading the love? How are you sending the elevator down and lifting hundreds of people up to get to the same vibrational plane that you are in? What are you doing to make the world a better place? What's your service? What's your passion? Why are you here? How are you contributing? These are all things that we talk about here on Raising the Vibration Radio. My nonprofit movement is at raisingthevibration.org, if you want to give that a look. And again, you can find out about it also at sheenametalspiritual.com. Every week on the show, I gather the folks that I believe to be the brightest, beautiful, and loveliest hearts and minds and souls in the spiritual community, the paranormal community, the world of give back, the arts world. From all over, we come in and we talk about what we're doing to make the world just a little bit more lovely. And my guest today understands all about that. She is a wonderfully talented author, speaker, off-world communicator, just a fabulous person, a very dear friend of mine. The very first guest on Raising the Vibration, when we brought it over here to the Live Paranormal Network on Tuesdays at 5 o'clock Pacific time, please welcome my wonderful friend, Andrea Perrin, to the show. It's always so great to have you here, sweetheart. So great to hear your voice and so great to share your loveliness with the world.
Have I told you today how much I love you?
Oh, isn't that nice to hear? Thank you, my friend. Very much returned to you.
You are a light in the firmament, a bright light in the firmament at a time.
Thank you.
Well, your timing is just perfect because, I mean, you know, if we ever needed a light, it's now.
Right.
Yeah.
In the firmament.
So.
Yes.
Yep. Yes, you know, I think it's safe to say that we'll take all the help we can get down here on planet Earth. And
I think it's very safe to say that.
Yeah, so, it's been, honey, let me tell you, it has been a crazy, crazy month. I don't want this to come off like I am in any way complaining, okay, because I'm getting exactly what I asked the universe for, precisely what I asked for. And so, you know, how dare I even consider being verklempt about it? but I'm just one person and I'm trying to do the work of 10. And every now and then it's just like my head is spinning. How can this all be happening at once? And so it's that. So, you know, what I'm going to do so that I can keep my wits about me tonight while I'm chatting with you is I'm going to do what I do best, which is multitask and put a football game on mute and watch it while I chat with you because it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And so Tom Brady and, you know, not that I don't have my issues with him, but, you know, there's like hardly anybody I don't have issues with lately.
Thankfully me.
Yeah, thankfully you. You are among the few that I have no issue, no problem, no nothing except light and love. I got to get my peanut up here on the bed. Come on. Oh, look what mommy's got. Look what mommy's got. Look at this. It's the fox.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, we love that.
Yeah, that went very well.
My 6-month-old kitten has discovered the cat programs on YouTube, the cat TV.
Yes.
And he is the cutest thing in the world. He likes this one that has pretty much everything. My favorite is when we put the TV on the ground so he can watch at his own level. And my favorite is when he runs up and he tries to punch the great white shark. And I think that's it, man, the 2-ton great white shark versus 7-pound Cullen. And here we go. But he doesn't like that thing. He's going to get that thing. But he'll just sit in front of it forever. But the problem is now, when you turn on the TV, he thinks you're going to put his show on. So he goes running over there and sits in front of the TV. Isn't that the cutest thing? Because he thinks it's going to be his show.
Pavlov's cat.
Oh, my God, right? What do they say?
Pavlov's cat, I'm telling you.
Right. Don't ever show a cat anything you don't want them to do for the rest of their lives. And I think that is very true. But, I know. Aren't they the most adorable? It's interesting what you said about the TV because when I do my video shows that I do two or three times a week for Live Paranormal, I do my video shows with the TV on because I like to let it run on mute in the background because it helps my concentration so I don't get too ADD.
Isn't that funny? It's the same for me. It is absolutely the same for me. And if I have trouble sleeping, note to everyone out there who is having trouble sleeping in the midst of, you know, a global pandemic and the world turned inside out. The Weather Channel works wonders because it's the same repetitious background music and the same information over and over and over again. And that cyclical, redundant, repetitive thing that they do is the most soothing, calming. It's like a freaking tranquilizer for me. I'm telling you, I can put it on the Weather Channel and I am out like the proverbial light. I mean, just out.
Yeah.
There's my baby.
Yeah, I agree.
Come here. Get over here.
You know,
I used to
do that with the news. But I have a hard time now doing that without having to do it with the news. I used to be able to do it. And just pass out.
Nope. Not anymore because
that's very difficult.
It is. And I also find that I wake up pissed off. So I do. I just wake up pissed off because I have heard everything throughout the course of the night. And even if it's not being processed consciously, it's being processed subconsciously. And so when I wake up, I'm in a rotten mood, and I don't want to be. You know, I want to take the peanut out into the backyard and watch her, you know, run like a gazelle on the Serengeti plain and hop like a bunny and chase squirrels up the tree, which she never makes it, even though she tries to climb the tree, which is hysterical. And, you know, That's how I want to start my day. I want to start every day with a fresh cup of hot coffee that Dad has made before I even get up out of bed, and have that sitting there ready and waiting for me, which he does with such regularity. The routine is the routine. And then out we go in the backyard with the peanut butter cup, the princess, and she gets to say hi to the dog next door, which is just a mirror image reflection of herself. It's just a little Boston Terrier who run up and down the fence line, screaming and barking at each other and carrying on like lunatics. And they do that for about 4 or 5 times up and down the fence line, which where Molly is probably about a 12-foot run. And so my neighbors and I, we just laugh and say, oh, the girls are getting their exercise, which it really is a form of exercise. And then Peanut goes and finds squirrels, and Peanut goes and finds leaves and Twizzlers that have fallen out of the long stringy pine cones that fall out of the cypress trees. And, you know, we have a 10 or 15 minute jaunt in the backyard. And meanwhile, after I've seen that she has done all of her business, because I have to watch and make sure everything's all set, then I am free to look up into the sky and say good morning to the galactic family and thank them for coming and tell them to, you know, please get down here sooner than later because we need some help. And the immediate answer I get every time I say it is, we're already here. And yet I ask every day, could you just
you do. Every day, could you
intervene?
I kind of picture you on the celestial supernova highway, Annie, with a cardboard sign that says, can I please have a ride home? And you're just kind of sitting there, you know, at the supernova underpass, hoping some ship will just pick you up and take pity on you and give you a ride home.
Yes, you know, and I go out there. I mean, I'm even dressed for the ride. I go out and I have a full-length, very plush, very deep blue, like dark blue sky robe that has stars all over it and planets all over it. And I wear my unicorn slippers out into the backyard. As long as I don't walk in the wet grass, they hold up pretty well. And if I have to walk in the grass, I'll just take them off so they don't get wet, but my feet do with the morning dew, and chase my dog down if she's, you know, behaving badly, which she never does, by the way. There, you know, no issues with the perfect peanut buttercup. And that's how I start every morning of my life if I'm not on the road. So I get up. All right. So I don't know. This probably happens to you all the time too. But because you know so many people all over the world, but about 4 or 5 days ago, one of my producers, Serena, who is from Australia, but she's living in London currently, calls me at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I had been up doing an interview till 11 o'clock the night before, and then, of course, drank half a gallon of coffee to be able to stay awake to do the interview. So I was up for hours and hours. I think maybe I fell asleep around 4 o'clock in the morning. So I had, maybe one good sleep cycle into me when the phone rings, and it's Serena, and she says to me, do you have any time this month? And, you know, of course I'm like, I'm so groggy. I can't even believe I answered the phone. And I said, okay, what month is it? And she said, it's October. I said, oh my God, it's October. It's like paranormal Christmas. What do you need, honey? And she said, I need 3 days in a row for you to come join me out at the Roswell crash site so that we can finish the documentary that we started. And I'm thinking, didn't we already finish that documentary? And so, you know, I thought we shot everything that you wanted when we were out in Joshua Tree, and you were there, of course, with us, which was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal,
right?
What you contributed to this. And she said, no, I have some other ideas. I want to go out. You know, I know you really were. You were phenomenal. It was that was really an amazing thing. And just to be able to spend that time with you, you know. But did you get a sunburn? Was it just me sitting up underneath a canopy for the whole time trying to get away from 117 degrees? And I came out of there with a sunburn. How do you get a sunburn under – well, that's an entirely different thing. So anyway, she said to me, well, I need a few days so that we can, you know, do some more shooting, and I would like to go out, you know, to Roswell to do it. And so I got up. I said, okay, let me make some coffee. Let me, you know, oh, God, let me get some coffee. And I looked on my calendar, and I had 3 days in the entire month of October that didn't have anything written in any box. And she calls me again later that day and said, well, I fell and I sprained my wrist, and I think I broke something, and I'm not sure, and I'm on my way to London City Hospital. And I said, okay, you know what? Let's kind of not do October. All right, let's do maybe a little bit later in the year. She's like, okay, I'm okay with that. So I don't know, but you might be getting one of those sudden calls. Honey, would you like to fly out to New Mexico and join us for the Roswell crash site incident thing?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would.
Yeah, I already knew that was an automatic answer.
I'd like to know how long it would take me to drive there. Because I think I have some extra lease miles, and my car lease is up in May, and I do like a long drive by myself. It's the only time I really get, and I love it.
Yeah, well, you know, you also have a really badass car. I think it's about 10 hours.
You know you love the car. You know you love this ride. You know you want to
do
cross country with me in this car.
Oh, honey, you know I'd be all in on that. Can you imagine? I mean, we would have to have a GoPro and whole bag of batteries, and we would need to record the entire conversation. We would. I mean, can you even imagine what conversation we could have if we had 5 days? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be incredible. It would. That would be great.
And you wouldn't even have to drive, because I love to drive. I drive the whole time. You could just sit in the car and play with the GoPro and look for aliens.
Yeah, well, you know, nothing would make me happier. But I gotta, you know, I'm gonna have a little puppy in my lap because I can't go anywhere without her. Oh.
Yeah, and I might
and
have,
I
a
have
kitten.
To go.
There might be a kitten in the back seat. Just a warning. There might be a very friendly kitten in the back seat.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. Peanut loves kitties. She loves to chase them because they run. Yeah. So, it would be just fine.
He thinks that's fun. Yeah.
Yes.
Totally. So
that's
exciting that there might be a part two. You know, I just had Michael Mazzulla here, and I just had Tony here. I just had Rick here. I just had Jay here on my Haunted Playground show, which is Wednesdays at 6, so I'm trying slowly to get the whole crew here from the Joshua Tree film.
Oh, my God, that was so incredible. That was so incredible. I cannot believe. Did I tell you what happened the last night I was there? I don't know if I did, but I was staying in the yurt, you know, the big round thing with the huge bed right smack in the center of it. That's where I stayed because, of course, the streamliner that I was staying in, which was really not a streamliner, it was just a wannabe streamliner that I had stayed in the first night, had more spiders than any other contained unit of any place I have ever seen. And, you know, I'm fine with spiders, but I'm not sleeping with them, you know. So I was a little like, ooh, no. So I ended up being in the yurt and the last night. And that was the night when we had everybody in a circle around and we were all looking at the sky at once. And that was the night that we heard, I guess, the whole group, three audible gasps at the same time. I don't know what they caught on film. You know, what they caught, I don't know. But because there were cameras pointed down, there were cameras pointed up, cameras everywhere. Everybody had a camera. It was crazy. So, you know, I don't know. I was just kind of being there in the moment. But later that night, I went in and laid down in the big bed after I did a thorough inspection for spiders, everything from little ones to tarantulas. And once I was quite certain that there weren't any, I crawled into bed, and I'm just laying there just thinking about everything that had transpired. It was something like ridiculous, like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I heard the coyotes going nuts. It sounded like the whole building was surrounded by coyotes. And you know me, I'm not afraid of anything. So I walked outside of my room. I opened up the door. I said, knock it off, you guys. Don't you know people are trying to sleep? And they went completely silent. I didn't see any of them, but it really did sound like the whole building was surrounded by them, that they were that close. And I'm standing there.
Wow.
And I look up at the sky, and all of a sudden, here comes this perfect, beautiful vessel that was translucent. I could see the circular shape of it, but I could look right through it into and see the stars behind it. And it traversed the entire sky until it got right over my head. And I said, where were you guys a few hours ago when I had, like, everybody here and all the cameras pointed upward? And where were you then? I mean, you're late to the party, you know, and I'm bitching them out. And all of a sudden, a flash of light, just a bright ping of white light, and it was gone. It didn't even take off. It just disappeared. And I couldn't help but laugh. And then I realized that the coyotes were actually used to get me out to look up.
Of course,
it's all integrated. It's all integrated. And once they had done their job to get me up out of bed to come on out and say hi to the family, they were done. I never heard them again the rest of the night.
So
it was wild. It was wild. I know. And then we spent the whole morning washing dishes, cleaning up the main house so that it looked like nobody had even been there, you know, cleaning out the refrigerator and taking all the trash out. And, oh, my God, it was hours of work. And then drove back with Serena to LAX, got dropped off, and got home at 1 o'clock the next morning. Yeah, it was nuts.
Wow.
My life is nuts. And now I'm doing it all over again because, I don't know exactly when I'm going to go out west and do whatever she wants to do because I automatically just say yes to her about any idea she has. But I'm going up, for those who are interested, my father, my sister Nancy, and I will be traveling to Rhode Island to do a live stream over Halloween weekend at the farmhouse. And, you know, I'm a little verklempt about it because this might be my last time at the farmhouse because the owners put it up for sale. It's been on the market for about 3 weeks for $1.2 million. Everyone keeps saying to me, why don't you buy it? And I laugh. Like, yeah, like I've got, you know, $1.2 million. That's not going to happen. And I'm not going to put myself in debt for the rest of my life. I just turned 63 on Sunday. I don't know how long I've got left, and I'm not going to spend it. Thank you. I am not going to spend it sweating bills. I'm not. So this might be, I have no idea who's going to buy it, what their intentions are, how that's going to look. So I have to make peace with this now, and I know you understand that. I have to make peace with this, go there and do this event and take it all in and love it and enjoy it for the time that I am there and say at least goodbye for now to the spirits, because I don't have any idea what the future holds around this piece of property. And I feel like I'm losing it again for the third time, just losing it. And yet it's so weird how things work out. Every time I think that I've lost it for good and I can't ever go back, something happens in the universe to open it back up to me. It's the strangest thing. But Mom and Christine and Cindy are going to come in remotely from a safe distance, 1,200 miles away from Georgia. And Dad, Nancy, and I will be there on the property.
You know, okay, so a couple things to make you feel better. First of all, anybody who's going to pay $1.2 million for that property has got to be a conjuring nut, because you would just have it for the celebrity profile of the house. And somebody like that is certainly going to welcome you all back with open arms. So I don't, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't see anybody paying that elevated price unless they're paranormal nuts that want to live in that famous house. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless they're willing to take a lot less money for it, which is a possibility, I would imagine. But, you know, what about the folks that lived there before these folks? Were they friendly? Were you allowed to go to the house?
All hell broke loose between the former owner and myself when The Conjuring came out. And she went on national TV after a 28-year-long friendship that we had, where I was, you know, allowed there, welcomed there anytime. That all changed after the film came out, and she went on national TV and called my mother a liar and said, everybody go away. There are no ghosts here. Now, this is the same woman who invited Jay Blemke and the Ghost Hunters in, to the house to film there, and one paranormal investigative group after another, after another, after another, for years and years. But when the film came out and she felt put upon by thrill seekers, she did a complete 180. She was thrilled to be living in a haunted house until she wasn't, and did a complete, utter, total 180, and said that, you know, we made it all up, which she knew better. Went on national TV and said, I never told her there was going to be a feature film made about the house or our story, when actually I have numerous interviews with her while that we're talking about the fact that a film is going to be made about our story. She is the one that gave my phone number to the original producer of The Conjuring and connected the two of us. And she has to live with that. You know, I don't even hate her guts. I should, but I don't. I'm a big girl. I can take care of myself. But when you go after my mother, who's been to hell and back, and
right.
accuse her of, and okay, and I, you know, here's the like most logical question of all. Why would I spend 7 years of my life, to the exclusion of all else, in the prime of my life, sitting tethered to a computer and writing House of Darkness, House of Light, the trilogy, one book that turned into three, to tell our story and to concoct one big, fat, elaborate lie and then make my entire family memorize it and swear to it and then put that out into the world so that we could be scrutinized, so that we could be vilified, so that we could be, you know, criticized from numerous corners, going out into the world with a story that is, had I not lived it myself, I don't know if I could believe every element of it. Why would I do that? Why would I just kind of throw my caution to the wind, throw myself on the sword, let the fates decide how my life's going to look? Why would I walk away from a really great, secure job in Rhode Island and move all the way to Georgia to live with my family so that I could get every story down of every recollection that they had living at that house so that I could just mold and shape it into, this is hands down, no competition, the most well documented haunting in American history, if not the world. People have been writing about this house for six decades. Not just me. I didn't publish my first book until 10 years ago. This house has been in the Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits by Rosemary Ellen Guiley. It was written about by Tom D'Agostino in Haunted Rhode Island. That was in the late 70s or early 80s. People knew that house, the house's reputation before we moved in. Nobody told us, but it was well known. And it was well known to be a haunted house in the area. And people, you know, the kids that would come up and down Round Top Road on their bikes would, it was like they were in the race of their lives to get past it, just to get away from it. In the 10 years that we lived there, not one goblin ever came to that door on Halloween for a piece of candy. That house was well known before we moved into it and started having our experiences. And nobody, you know, it was before, it was a different time. You grew up very much like I did. It was a different time. And this was not something that was spoken about publicly. It was a taboo subject. It was whispered about around campfires. It was not talked about in, you know, in common terms of, oh, yeah, this house is haunted or that graveyard is active or, you know, I mean, people didn't 50, 60 years ago. This was not a subject that was open for discussion. It just wasn't. So, yeah, it was a different time. But I'll tell you what, knowing the way you grew up, knowing the way I grew up, is it any wonder that we turned out the way that we did?
No, not at all. It's not a surprise at all. I became a paranormal seeker because I grew up in a very active house. I wanted to watch all the ghost hunters and the most haunted and the the Ghost Adventures and all those shows because I wanted to see other people, especially the Paranormal State, because they did less of the haunted locations and more of being in people's homes. And I wanted to see what people were going through in their homes.
Yeah.
And seeing the things that, you know, and I told this story yesterday when I had Tony Raffin on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Even my father, who was the biggest atheist known to man, the man who liked robots more than people, when I showed him a paranormal doc that I was in the 90s, and he saw machines capturing spirit activity. Then suddenly, after all those years of telling my mom and me that we were crazy, he's like, oh, you know, when we lived in that house at 3 o'clock every morning, a Franciscan monk would sit on the end of the bed and stare at me and then just get up and walk through the wall. But I didn't think it was paranormal. Let me tell you something.
Well,
you've never heard my mother scream so loud and for so long after, you know, 30 years of being told she was crazy. And then suddenly, oh, you know, she's like, he said it didn't exist. And that bastard was having a visitation every single night. Well, there you go, right? At least his was so calm. How come he got the sweet monk who just sat on the end of the bed? You know, Mom and I got the Haunted Mansion hitchhikers.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the truth is people see and people believe they don't want to. I don't believe at all that those people that bought the Amityville house are like, oh, we've seen nothing here. I don't believe it. I think people are terrified about their property values.
Yeah.
And they don't want people to know because they're scared they won't be able to sell their house. And I get that. I'm a homeowner. I have two homes. I get that. It's scary to think of that. But it's not fair to call somebody a liar or to call somebody's elderly mother a liar because, you know what I mean? That woman's lucky that she still has her teeth. I say as a very benevolent, peace-loving, vibration-raising Irishman, but she's still very lucky that she has her teeth.
Well, if there's any question in the minds of any of your listeners, please feel free to avail yourselves of the magical internet where you can go online and look up Season 2, Episode 7 of Ghost Hunters. And the second half of the show is called the Sutcliffe Investigation. And that's my childhood home. And she is the one at the end of the broadcast who looks into the camera and says, well, I guess I do have a bona fide haunted house.
Oh, well, wasn't she proud of it then?
Yeah, wasn't she proud of it then? You know, but the thing is, I can't go after her. I just can't with her nonsensical ranting and raving on YouTube videos and all the stuff that she put out in the world because her husband passed away and he was one of the kindest, most gentle, sweetest human beings that I ever had the privilege to know. And I just can't. She's already revealed herself. I don't need to reveal her further. She has already revealed herself. So there's that. You know, our family has been completely, utterly, totally consistent in every respect of this story and our experiences for 50 years. Nothing has changed. The stories are exactly the same. Reason is, that's exactly what happened. And so when we tell it, tell what happened. You know, if you're not lying, you don't have to, you know, struggle to find the words or to, you know, be hyperbolic or to exaggerate anything. It's like, this is what happened. This is when it happened. This is how it happened. Okay, you want to talk about the next story? I mean, it's matter of fact to us now. It really is. When you've had this many decades to process and experience, you can look back on it and it just becomes another story. It's just supernatural rather than, but to me, and I've said this to you on your show before, I think that everything, that paranormal is normal, that supernatural is natural. If it exists, it's normal and it's natural. Just not everybody has, for whatever reason, has the same experiences that we do. I don't think it was necessarily just about the house. I think there was,
right.
There is ancient energy in that property, in those stone walls. And, you know, we saw, my sister April saw Indian children from the Nipmuc tribe. It was their property for thousands of years before the colonists moved in. She saw little Indian children dressed in all their ancient garb and their skins and their, and she was just a little kid herself. And she saw them playing on the property back in the pine forest. You know, that's ancient stuff. That's, you can't qualify sure. that as elemental. You can't qualify. It's that same feeling that I get when I go to Gettysburg. And when I go out on the battlefield, I don't have a sense of any terror or any remorse or any fear when I'm out there. I feel what is ancient about that land. I feel the rudimentary essence of the tribes that lived there for thousands of years before the Western Europeans moved in and took over and made war all over their beautiful land. But when I go to Gettysburg, I don't have those feelings of trepidation that, you know, I'm going to see soldiers and dead horses and death and everything. I don't feel that when I'm there. And, you know, I talked to my friend George about that one time when we were there, and said, you know, why don't I feel the battle? Why don't I feel that? Why do I only feel American Indian energy here? And he said, I don't know. He said, think about it for a moment. And I just looked at him and I said, because they all knew they were going to die. And he said, yep, they knew they were going to die. So before they even wow. got to that battlefield, they made peace with the fact that they were most likely not going to survive that brutal, yeah. brutal sure. bloodbath.
Sure, absolutely.
So I don't know. It's the,
yeah.
yep, it's the same
feel
with the
sadness.
Farm.
When I go places like that, I feel yeah. sadness. I feel everyone's sadness. But I feel living people's sadness. I think I may be just
yeah,
a sad
too.
Whisperer. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean? I just
I
feel the sadness.
Yeah. I do. I did at Antietam. I did feel the sadness at Antietam. Antietam was a gruesome battle in its own right. And were you aware that it was the Battle of Antietam that really started to bring an end to the Civil War? Because
yes.
photographers at the time, that photography was a brand new thing, photographers came out and they photographed the aftermath of that battle and then published those pictures in newspapers from, you know, one end of this country to the other. And when people saw what was happening, they lost their bloodlust. They just lost it. It was no longer worth it. It was no longer worth fighting brother to brother. It was just over. And yet, you know, oh, God, honey, I know this is all supposed to be really uplifting, but you want to know what drove me insane today? I have to tell you.
What,
you know, as
tell
we're
me.
Talking
tell
about...
Me.
The, you know, as we're sitting here discussing the Civil War, I don't even know how we got on it. I'm sure it's my fault. But, you know, it was literally brother fighting against brother in some respects, especially
yeah.
along Mason-Dixon line and all of that. I woke up this morning and I moved it from the Weather Channel to the news, and the first thing I saw was the story. I saw a picture of a man that looked like, well, let me put it to you this way. He made Sasquatch look well-groomed. Picture of this guy up on the screen, and the story of him walking into a pharmacy and killing the pharmacist for delivering COVID vaccines to people. And as far as he was concerned, the pharmacist was poisoning people. And so he killed him right across the counter. And the pharmacist that he killed was his brother. His brother. So you tell me.
Civil war all over again, right? We got to be careful that doesn't happen in this country. I didn't know. I've learned
it is happening.
I didn't know that you were a Civil War aficionado. I did not know that. I have been one since I was a baby. And I can feel when I talk to you and listen to you talk about the Civil War, you had a past life during that time. That's a time of yours.
Yeah, that could be. I don't know. There's a lot of times. I mean, I'm just being perfectly honest with you. I've had a lot of experiences where I feel, especially at the farmhouse, where I felt like I somehow must have lived there before, especially when I saw the apparition that looked like me as an old woman when I was 17 years old. And I mean, she was like a mirror image reflection of me now with a lot more hair. I mean, really, she had to have been in her 60s, probably in her 60s, and I just turned 63. And I was 17 years old, and I saw her, and I was like, oh, my God. But we know that apparitions can sometimes trick you. But I didn't feel tricked. I didn't. I felt like she was just looking at me, and I was looking back at her, and we were looking at each other in different lifetimes. But honest to God, I feel like this is my first and only time on this planet. That's how foreign Earth feels to me. As beautiful as it is, as strikingly beautiful as it is, I have always felt like there was a clerical error made in the universe and that I'm here by accident. I've never felt like I belonged here. The only place that I ever had any feeling of being home at all, was the farmhouse. And that's it. Every place else has felt temporary. That's the only permanence in my life is my feeling of being there. And I think it's because it's just such an interdimensional place that you don't spend a whole lot of time in 3D while you're there. At least I'm speaking for myself. Because I felt like I had more in common with the spirits than I had with real live people at times. I could communicate with them with more ease. I could communicate with them the same way that I communicate with my mother, which is telepathically. But I don't really have that so much with anybody else as I have it with Mom. But I had it with them. All of them. And I could talk to them. And when they started acting up, I could usually quell it with, not now. Please don't do this. We have company. You see that we have company? Don't behave like this while we have company. And it would stop.
Wow.
And all I had to do was think it. Like, don't do this now. All I had to do was think it. And it would stop, especially when my friends were over, because I wanted my friends to feel comfortable in the house. And I know it worked because my dear friends, Tim and Ray, who are like brothers to me, I've known them since I was, 12 years old. Since we were all 12 years old. They never had any experiences in the house that freaked them out at all. And they were there with some regularity. I mean, they weren't there all the time, but they, you know, they came and visited pretty frequently, and neither one of them have any memories of having anything put itself upon them while they were there. And yet my other sisters had friends that came who regularly had stuff happen, and including my sister Nancy's boyfriend, Eddie Richardson, and his ancestors built that house. And when Eddie walked in that house, all hell broke loose. I mean, stuff went flying around. Windows were slamming shut. It sounded like bodies were falling on the floors upstairs. There was always something that happened. Big noises, big commotion. You know, very dramatic things would happen in the house when Eddie was there. And he was totally chill about it. Like, yeah, well, you know, whatever, it's fine. It's just fine. We all know who it is. And he was absolutely fine about it. But I don't know. You know what? We're never going to be able to explain any and all of this. And I know I'm treating this show like it's Paranormal Playground instead of Raising the Vibration. But I hope
that's okay, 'cause we're going to do that one next.
Okay. So, you know, I mean, let's talk about Raising the Vibration. Let's talk about how incredibly important it is, especially now when people are dropping like flies because they refuse to get an efficacious vaccine, and they're dropping like flies and leaving families behind who are devastated by the loss of their loved ones. What more important time is there to assure people that maybe as sad, as unnecessary as their deaths are at this point, 9 months, 10 months into vaccination land, but that they're still with us. And I don't know what their reasons are. I can't even imagine what their reasons are that they wouldn't want to roll up their sleeve and take something that's fully FDA approved, that it'll keep them from going in the hospital and dying from a deadly invisible virus. I can't explain it. I will never be able to explain it. I'm sitting here chomping at the bit going, when can I get my booster? You know, meanwhile, there's 70 million people in this country that are like, thanks, but no thanks. Okay, I can't explain that. But what I can assure all of them is that when they lose loved ones, which they inevitably will, to this virus that's not going anywhere because we can't defeat it, because a third of the population refuses to believe in science, okay, fine. But let me tell you that when they die, they're not really gone. They're out of their physical vessel, yes. And that's tragic, and it's sad that it had to happen for no good reason. But they're not really gone. And for me to know, to have lived my whole life, virtually my whole life, knowing that there is something beyond our mortal existence, brings me incredible comfort. And I hope that it brings comfort to others as well. You know,
I love that.
You know,
and we are totally out of time. I'm so sorry, but
we're
going to do some more radio very quickly.
Okay.
So where can people find you online? And then I'll be back with you, and we're going to do another show right after this.
Okay, just Google my name. I'm everywhere. It's so easy to find me. There it is.
Wonderful. And your parent, everybody. Isn't she wonderful? What a joy to have you here on the show, my friend. If you missed those links, Sheena Metal Spiritual, that's how you find me. Raising the Vibration Radio, that's how you find this show. LiveParanormal.com, that's how you find the network. Check us out also at iHeartRadio.com. And my nonprofit, RaisingTheVibration.org. Till I see you next time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, and always, always, always raise your vibration. I'm Sheena Metal. I love you. I'll see you next time.